around the San Francisco Bay Area. It's time for Live from the Bay with Joey. Here's Joey.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Live from the Bay with Joey. This is Joey, and we're having such a great show for you this evening. Joining us will be best-selling Harlequin romance author Donna Young, hailing from Northern California. Donna will talk to us about a brand-new recent release, Bodyguard Lockdown. We will talk about her early life, her career, and some other passions that Donna has besides being an author. So before we do that, we're going to have some hot topics. We're going to go over some interesting newsworthy items that deserve, perhaps do not deserve, our attention. You are the one that ultimately decides. And before that, I just want to tell folks once again that last week we just had a wonderful show with Shelley Morrison and her husband. Her husband, Walter Dominguez, who is a film director, and definitely go into the archives on demand. Be sure to listen to that show. Wonderful show. It was actually a staff pick, so seen by hundreds of thousands of people. So anyway, and a shout-out to all my friends, of course. And I think right now what we're going to do is, I don't know if Jammin's there. Jammin, are you there with me right now?
Hi, Joey. What's up?
Well, it's time for us to, we're going to do some hot topics that we're going to go over, like usual. I think I'm going to do it a little bit different. So we're going to, I've been doing it a little bit different, but we're going to go over a few, and then we'll bring Dawn on, and then we'll close it with a few more. How does that sound?
Sounds great.
Okay. So I think it's time for us to talk some hot topics. So I think what we're going to do, we're just going to crank up the hot topics.
We're just going to crank it up, crank it up.
So, you know, Jammin, I've been on my bandwagon about this bag tax, right? So, I mean, the last couple of shows I've talked about it. We have in the Bay Area here and some cities where they're charging now for bags. They're trying to get rid of plastic bags. So now they're charging for bags, and they charge like 10 cents, right? And they're saying, some places say, oh, yeah, the money goes to the city. The city says, no, it doesn't. It goes to the store. And I've been on strike, and I don't like it. And I know a lot of other people don't like it. So what I have done, as you know, is I've said in the town that I'm in, they are doing it. And I'm like, no, no, no. I will not be a part of this. So I have ended up driving like 8 to 10 miles from the town that I live in to go to another town to do all my shopping so I don't have to pay this bag tax, right? And I know where you live, you have that same annoying charge for bags. So it either forces you to use dirty bags, old bags, or it forces you to buy cloth bags, and they're not really sanitary unless you're washing them all the time, right?
That's right, they're not.
So I just found out the other day, hallelujah, that the town adjacent to me is not charging that bag tax until like July or August. So I was absolutely elated, okay? I was so jazzed. So I go in there, you know, all the groceries are going through, you know, and I'm like, they're bagging it. Would you like a bag? Of course. So they're bagging it, but I noticed that they're using paper bags. So I'm like, okay. Now, remember the last time I was in a store in my town, I paid 10 cents for these bags, right? And I told you what happened to the bags. They just busted open, right? They were like these flimsy, thin bags. So here I am in line, and now I don't have to pay that bag, but they're putting them in paper bags, no more plastic bags. And I go to pick it up, and guess what happened?
It broke.
I'm like, really? Really? I mean, I don't even have to pay 10 cents. I just have to go to the town adjacent to me, not pay 10 cents per bag, and now their bags, you know, I think that they're probably, it's conspiracy. They're getting these paper bags from the same manufacturer. They put things in the paper bag, and it doesn't hold. So, you know, this is like, I've got an issue, man. I said a few weeks ago that whoever came up with this ridiculous idea, should have bagged it a long time ago, and I'm still saying the same thing. I don't like it. I need to find a way around this. If anybody has any ideas, let us know, please. Send us an email here. I don't give a rip. But, yeah, I'm just kind of over it. Anyway, onward and forward to some other items. I see in the news that there was an ancient quarry used to build Jerusalem that was found. Did you hear about that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it fits into the Second Temple period between 538 BC and AD 70. So that's kind of interesting, and I think it is a total of the uncovered area in total is 11,000 square feet. So it's kind of interesting. People can go online to read about it. Again, ancient quarry used to build Jerusalem found. So that's kind of cool, huh?
Yeah, it is.
I think so. And then I saw something that I thought was really interesting. You know, I know you're a big avid fan of alternative medicine. So I just saw something that I thought was interesting. They found that alligator blood, may hold a key to cure a lot of diseases thought to have no cure. And this was taken from Oh My God Facts, and let me read it to you. Quote, maybe Charlie Sheen should have used this instead of tiger blood to seem more badass. Scientists have often been puzzled as why alligators never seem to get infections. Did you know that? I didn't know that.
No, I didn't.
and I've been to Florida many times. Thank you very much. They often get into violent fights over territories and mates, and they get wounds that should be easy targets for infection. Their blood might be the key. So these chemists have isolated blood from the American alligator, and they've destroyed 23 strains of bacteria, including ones known to be resistant to antibiotics. In fact, the blood has proven strong enough to destroy a significant amount of HIV. So now they're working in isolating the active compounds that help the alligator and put it into medicine for human use. So that's kind of cool and kind of scary, too. I mean, I don't want to be the first one that they tested out on, you know. All of a sudden, I have this urge to jump into a swamp or something. No, thank you. But, you know, that's kind of interesting, isn't it?
So they found this in the alligator blood.
Yep. The funny thing is here, you think about it, and do you really want to take something that, you know, that's alligator, I mean, that's derived from alligator blood? Now, again, this is cut out. It has actually destroyed these really heavy duty pathogens that, you know, were resistant to antibiotics, right? Well, 23 strains of bacteria resistant to antibiotics, and that's huge. You know, and you know my background, so having sold in the pharmaceutical industry and having sold antibiotics, I know how important that is because, you know, when you get down to only one or two agents left for a patient because none of the other ones are working because it's resistant, the worry is out there, where do we go from here? So this may prove to be really, you know, something that'll work out fine. So
that would be just tremendous, you know, because I know that there's more and more strains of bacteria that are antibiotic resistant, more and more and more as time goes on. So it's great that they're coming up with other approaches.
Yeah, I think so, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Now, what was your comment? Your comment was you wonder if they're going to do what with alligators?
Well, you know, it's off the wall crazy. You know how I am.
Yeah,
but
I'm crazy.
Hey, you can't say that. Who do you think you are? You know?
I know who I am.
I was just wondering, you know, how they mass produce things. If they find something that's very beneficial, you know, how are they going to get this alligator blood? Are they going to start having alligator farms where they grow alligators and then take their blood? Or are they going to have to catch them in the wild to get their blood? Or, you know,
I don't
how are
know.
They going to do
that's
this?
A,
you know?
Yeah, that's a good question. But such a great segue into my final little story before I make another comment, and then we'll bring Donna Young on. But really good segue there, Jammin, because Well, we're not going to talk about alligators, but did you hear this story? This is from Food in the News. This was really kind of weird. $325,000 lab burger is close to completion. Did you hear that? A $325,000 lab burger. Okay, so according to the New York Times, Dr. Mark Post is close to debuting the first ever burger that was grown in a laboratory. And it says, upon the meat's completion, the burger patty will be cooked and eaten with just a little salt and pepper for seasoning. And with the first bite, Dr. Post will have proven that cultured meat, or meat that does not come directly from a cow, is not only a possibility, but an accomplishment. You know, it's something that he's accomplished, the goal. But, you know, the weird thing about that, that's a lot of money to spend on testing something like this. And then the other thing is, do I really want to eat something that's been fabricated in a laboratory? You know, it kind of reminds me of, remember last year when people were freaked out with meat because of that pink, what was it called? The pink, it was like pink fat that was found around like hamburgers. And they're saying, oh, you know, this think like this pink addition to meats, you know, if you find it in your burgers, you know, or in your hamburger meat, be sure to get rid of it. And some places are using it and cooking hamburgers, and I think it's derived from pigs or something. This is some kind of gross thing. But, you know, I'm looking at this thinking, I don't know if I want to go to like a hamburger joint like McDonald's or one of the other places and find out that they're going to be utilizing this. I doubt that they will, but who knows? I mean, who knows who's going to be doing what? But $325,000 is a lot of money to spend on figuring out if this is going to work, you know?
Whew, yeah, and what are all the long-term effects of eating synthesized meat, I guess, if you call
it
meat?
Well, it's actually, so it says, let me see, because it talks about how it's done. It's kind of a, this is how he develops his in vitro burger. He used a certain type of stem cell, which bodies typically use to repair muscle tissue. Those cells are taken from the neck of a cow and then put in containers to grow a special growth medium. While this may sound pretty straightforward, just getting this process right was an arduous process, complicating things. Dr. Post needed to grow billions of cells, not just a mere few. After the cells begin to multiply, they must be significantly differentiated so they can become muscle cells. Eventually, the muscle cells put on protein, and this is how a tiny strip of muscle tissue is formed. The strip is a half an inch long, and 1/25 of an inch in diameter. Enough of those individual strips must be formed to make one single patty. And, you know, wow, that's a lot of prep time there, you know, so that's kind of how that's going to come to fruition. What do you think about that? I mean, that's just mind-boggling to me. So, yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I don't know if that's something that I don't know, like a fabricated hamburger. Just sounds different. So, I think we're ready to introduce our guest in a few minutes here, in a few seconds here. Before I do that, I wanted to say, didn't you enjoy the show we did last week with Shelley Morrison and her husband? That was a great show, right?
Oh, that was excellent. I just had such a great time hearing their stories.
Yeah, it was really great. And his short film documentary, well, it's not a short film. It's a documentary. It's a film documentary, Weaving the Past, is, you know, I expect to hear some really big things about that, so moving forward. So anyway, and folks can hear that. They can go in to on-demand mode. You can hear any of our shows that we've done in the past. And so go ahead and do that. But tonight, folks, we have an interesting guest. She's an author of romance novels raised in the suburbs of Detroit, Michigan, always an avid reader. She grew up the youngest, but certainly not the quietest of seven children. Her family books were recycled almost as often as the clothes. She was into Westerns, espionage, fantasy, sci-fi, romance, and she loved them all. So that combined with an overactive imagination, a strong dependence on coffee, yay for coffee, an unwavering belief in happy ever after, it did the trick. So she's been writing now for about 5 years. When Donna isn't writing, she's hanging with her kids, golfing, reading, or catching up on her DVR movie backlog. So, folks, let's welcome to Live from the Bay with Joey, romance best-selling author Donna Young. Hi, Donna. How are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you, Joey?
I'm doing great. This is a great treat for us to have you here and get a, you know, have some time to talk to you. And, you know, it's not very often that we are able to talk with an author of romance novels, so that's kind of a treat right there. Now, I have to go and tell everyone how we first met. So can I go into that story?
Absolutely.
So it's kind of interesting, folks, because I was looking for an author to bring on to the show. And so I just happened to be doing some work at one of the local Starbucks in the area. And it's not the place that I normally go, but it's one that's not too far away. And so I was there, and I had met with a friend, and we were talking and chatting. And what was interesting was Donna was there, and then a friend of hers came in, and that was kind of strange to me because this friend of hers had a strong resemblance to a buddy of mine and his wife, that live up in Washington State. Her friend looked so much like this person that I kept going, that's interesting. And then I wasn't trying to listen in, but come to find out that Donna was an author. So we had a chance to talk a little bit, and she shared with me what she did, and I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. And so kind of the rest is history, and here you are. So it was kind of meant to happen. So anyway, so welcome. And again, I really want to give people an idea of where you've come from, where you're going, and future things. So I'm going to ask you a little bit about your life, your early life, raised in Michigan, was it? Is that right?
Yeah, I was raised. I was raised just in a suburb outside of Detroit, about 20 minutes north of Detroit, and just a small community like any of the ones on the peninsula here. It is just my dad was part of the car industry, and my mom was a full-time mom, and she had five boys and two girls, and they all went to the private school and parochial school, and that was pretty much it. There was nine of us in one bathroom, so we didn't know any different. That was just how it was back then. It was fun. It was good.
Oh, well, that's kind of good. So outside of Detroit, you're saying?
Yeah. It's a suburb. It was Madison Heights, Royal Oak, Troy area.
I see. Okay. Well, that's great. So let me ask you, at what age did you realize that you wanted to be a writer, and what inspired you?
You know what? It's really funny because I didn't know I wanted to be a writer until later on, until I was almost 30. I loved books. I loved creative writing in school. I ended up going into corporate America and working, and it wasn't until I decided that I was going to be a full-time mom, and I had my son. He was probably about a year old. And then my family kind of nudged me into it because I always said, oh, you know, it would be fun to write a book.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're like, why don't you go ahead and do it and see what happens? And so I kind of fell into it. It was kind of funny the way it happened. And then the first book I wrote was really bad.
Did you say it was really bad?
It was really bad. I wrote a Western.
A Western?
Yes, I did. And because.
And what were, do you remember some of the characters' names?
Oh, yeah, I do. Let me think. If I got Darcy and was one of them. I don't remember the guy's name. I don't, honestly. It was just a really bad Western, but it you know, when you first write a book, you think, oh, this is great. You know, I wrote a book, I finished it, it's going to get published, and I sent it off to a publishing house, and what happened was considered very lucky. I got an editor who actually liked my voice, and she said, you know, your voice, I can see it, it's got potential, but you really do need to learn the craft. So I suggest you know, kind of work at it, take some classes, join a writing group, and when you write another one, send it back to me. And I'd read it. And so I did exactly what she had said. And it was nice. I took some classes, and one of the instructors of the class happened to be an author, Kate Stevenson, and she wrote for Harlequin. And she saw some of my work, and she said, you know, this is really good. You really kind of applied yourself, and there's this writing contest, and Harlequin, the final judge, is one of the executive editors of Harlequin, and so I actually placed high in the contest, and Mary Teresa Hussey got a hold of my manuscript, and a year later they offered me a contract.
Wow. Now that was how many years ago? 5 years ago?
No, it was after that. My first book came out in 2005, so it was 2004, 2003.
Okay, so it's been quite a few years.
It's been about 10. Yeah, you know, that it takes about a good year for once you finish the book for it to be released. So, yeah, it was probably 2004 when they actually contracted it, and then 2005 it went out.
Wow. Well, so now I'm wondering. So you took these classes. They saw this talent. And then did you ever have a desire to write? I mean, you said you wrote this really terrible Western book. And I'm sure there were people that got that, you know, they still have copies of it. But now years later, I'm wondering how you would go from that to a romance. Writing romance books.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know what? I did the romance. Okay, this is, I wish I could say it was the book of my heart, but actually romance is the highest selling genre in publishing companies.
Is that right?
It's over 50% of the books sold worldwide are romance, the genre romance. So when I joined this writing group, I started doing research on the market, and I loved romance. I loved reading romance, and at that time when I got in, it was after 2000, and the market for romance was changing. It was no longer the 80s romance where the women were all, you know, what they called the bodice rippers in the 80s, and the women were always being saved by the men. The characters were getting more like Laura Croft and stronger, and they were kind of saving the heroes as much as the heroes are saving them. And so the books became much more fun. And so I enjoyed reading them. And so it kind of just seemed like a natural
progression
when I started actually. And once I learned that, Kate Stevenson wrote suspense for Harlequin. And so in order to understand the classes better, I decided to write books, just to write a contemporary suspense. And I just happened to fall into it, and I enjoyed it so much, and I think it came through on the writing, because it's kind of like James Bond type story, you know, with the James Bond gets married at the end, kind of.
Yeah, I'm wondering now, do you have stats, like, how many people, like, really, your readers, how many are, like, female and how many are male? Do you think there's an equal amount, or do you think it's more... You know, it's split up more female that tend to. Do you know? Have you ever researched it or found out any?
No, I don't. I'm sure there's stats out there. I do know that the publishing companies do studies on it, and I know the last study I heard, and this was probably a year or so ago.
Yeah.
The average range of romance readers was like 22 to 58, 62.
Oh, wow.
And that a lot of them are educated. White collar, women who want a fast, easy escape read that's fun and has that lighthearted ending and the happily ever after, and they can read it and they can move on to another one and read it, and it just gives them that moment that they don't have to, you know, they can, you know, that afternoon where they don't have to worry about anything and they can just step into that other world. That's, I don't know how many men actually read romance. I know several men personally because I'm the writer, I'm a writer, excuse me, they'll read my book, but I can tell you most of my fans that come and email me are women.
Okay. Well, okay, so that, okay, so that's going to lead me into my next questions here. Okay, so you ready?
Yes.
Now, I've looked at some of the names of your books. Now, okay, now we're talking about, you know, they want a fast read and blah, blah, blah. But it seems like some of the names are very similar. They have, like, lockdown in them, the word lock or bodyguard or what have you. Is there a pattern in all of this, or are they different stories? Are there any continuations of other stories?
Yeah, mine are a series. That's why y'all, and most of them you'll see the word bodyguard in the title. Bodyguard Rescue, Bodyguard Engaging Bodyguard, Bodyguard Lockdown, Black Ops Bodyguard. Basically, it's a mine started out, not intentionally, but I had a, I started out with a Black Ops fictional operation. And the characters in them, I started bringing in other characters, you know, as secondary characters in my stories. And then I started getting feedback from my readers saying that they wanted to hear the secondary, you know, they wanted a book on the secondary character of our particular story. So it ended up being a series. And you'll see a lot of my characters will interact throughout the books. I have one or two that pretty much show up in, I would say, most of the books. And it seems the feedback I get from my readers is they really like that because they like to see where the couples are or the hero and the heroines from a previous book. They get to see what they're doing now in this new book about somebody else because they'll make an appearance in the book for one reason or another. So it, but that being said, you can actually sit down with any of them and pick it up and it stands by itself. You don't have to read the whole series to understand what's going on because each story stands by itself. But out of the 9 books I've published with Harlequin, 8 of them are part of the Labyrinth Black Ops series.
Yeah. Wow. Now, I'm wondering, so what goes through my mind, and I'm sure some listeners are wondering the same thing, how long does it take for you to come up with these characters, and how long does it take to write just one book?
You know what? I think the shortest I wrote a book is 3 months, and the longest it took me a year. And that wasn't because of the actual writing. That was because I have 2 teenagers, and so I'm actually fortunate where I can write around their schedules. But when I'm really cranking them out, I would say it takes about 4 months to from start to finish to really write one book. And that's not with the editing. That's just my part because it has to go through a series of edits with the publishing company and stuff.
So after you're done with your part, the edits take about how much longer?
Oh, about a year.
About a year?
Yeah, by the time it hits the shelf. So I send in my book, and then in about a month or so, sometimes longer, sometimes shorter, they'll send me back and they'll do a preliminary edit and ask me questions about it. And then I'll go through and answer the questions. And it's basically to check continuity and different things in the book and make sure it makes sense. And then I send it back and then they'll run it through edits again and I'll get it back. And then I'll take a look at it to make sure that they haven't made any changes I didn't agree with or I do agree with. And then we'll talk about it. Then it goes back for what they call copy editing and line editing. And so it goes through about a series of about 5 edits before I finally don't see it anymore. And that's probably a 6-month process.
Wow.
Yeah, it takes a while. And then the PR department gets it, and they assign it a title, and they assign it a cover, and they assign it a release date. And then it goes.
Okay. Hey, real quick here, Donna, you know, I'm going to ask you, Donna, we're hearing some background noise. I don't know what it is, but it's really loud, a little bit loud on, I'm wondering if it's the Skype system at all, but hopefully there's nothing right around you. But anyway, hopefully we'll be able to get through this with no problem.
I think it, you know what, I think it's me. I think I was reaching for water and everything.
Oh, you can't
I'm
drink
sorry.
Any water. No,
I know.
You have to drink coffee. What's wrong with you? It's coffee.
I know. You know what? I would do coffee, actually. I didn't get a chance to make any before we got on. Yeah. But you know how much I like coffee.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Me too. So let's talk about your fans. You said you mentioned earlier about some of the fan mail that you've received. So I'm going to ask you to go back into that. I'm going to make you think. So, tell me about a note or correspondence, a piece of mail that you've received from a fan that really made you smile. Can you think of anything that really stood out?
Yeah, I just had one actually. And Bodyguard Lockdown just came out, and the two characters in Bodyguard Lockdown, the one that we're talking about that was just released this month, I have a fan that has been waiting 2 years to see the story on the and so she was very excited about that they were coming out. And so I have my new Facebook up, and I was letting her know about the Facebook. And she came back, and I didn't know this, and she told me that she had already gotten the book and that she was so excited, and that she was French. And because Harlequin sells internationally, and she was French, and she was learning English, and she would reread my books to practice her English.
Oh, how cool is that?
I know. I just love her for that. And she's like, she said, I just love your books. I love reading, so I can practice my English. And so I sent her an autographed copy because that just warmed my heart. It was awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's great. To know that your work is in France or in the hands of somebody in France is kind of cool, you know, even though obviously you know it's international. But, you know, when you have some work that you've done here and it's clear across the other side of the world,
right.
it's kind of cool, you know, I think.
And I love that technology can, you know, we can converse back and forth on email and stuff. So it's very, you know, so I get to have that hands-on practically kind of conversation with them.
Yeah. Well, you know,
immediate feedback.
When I met you, we spoke for a little while, and you know what I did notice is that you do, you know, you obviously you're a very friendly person, but you are filled with, you can tell that you have a lot of imagination going on, you know? I mean, that you must be filled with that. And so what I want to know is, when you're writing, do any of these characters in any of these books become sort of lifelike to you? And the other part of my question is, are any of them patterned after friends or family or acquaintances or anything?
You know what? They are not patterned. I really do try to stay away from patterning characters on people that I know, because it stops the creative flow if you get that mixed up in your head. They aren't real to me, but they do live in my head. Basically, how a character kind of emerges into the story is through dialogue with me. Usually when I start a story, I always start with dialogue, and I catch the rhythm of the person and their personality through how they speak to each other in the story. And then they do kind of morph as real people in my head. By the time I finish the story, though, I'm ready to move on. You know, their story is done, and I'm just as happy to see the happy ending as I think the readers. I hope the readers are, because I never really write kind of without plotting out the story. It just kind of flows, so I never know how the story is going to end until I finish the book, which is fun. The only thing that I do relate it back to my life is a lot of my main characters in all of my books and secondary characters, the first names are named after my nieces and nephews. I will pull a name of my niece or my nephew. So they each all have their own book.
Wow, that's kind of nice. What a nice
hand. I've got a lot of nieces and nephews. I've got like 24. And so they flow in and out. And usually when I'm writing a book, I will let them know that their book is coming out, and they get really excited.
Now, have you done that with any of your children or not?
No.
Oh, okay.
My children, it's different. I know. Isn't that funny? My
no, I mean, it's just, I mean, we're all, you know, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of, I guess it's because they're mine. I don't know. It just, to me, I don't think I can go that way with my imagination, maybe, because they're mine. I don't know. Even with my nieces and nephews, it's only their name. They never look or act like that particular person. It's just only their name. But no. Isn't that funny? I started that the first time. I kind of just as a fun thing. And then when I was writing, even before I knew I was going to sell the manuscript, I did that. And so now it's just kind of a family tradition that I put their names in the book.
So let's talk about this new. Okay, so your newest edition is Bodyguard Lockdown. Now, when did this come out? How long ago?
It came out the 1st of May. I think it was actually online ordering April 23rd. But it's the 8th in the series,
mm-hmm.
The Labyrinth series,
mm-hmm.
And you can get it an ebook or you can get the print copy whether you at Barnes and Noble or you can order online through Amazon or Barnes and Noble.
Mm-hmm. Now, can they get this anywhere else? Can they, outside of online and Barnes and Noble, can they pick up any of the, you know, any of your series anywhere else?
Not the new, they can't pick up the old one. They have to definitely order them online because
mm-hmm.
They're only out on the shelves for probably a month or more
mm-hmm.
Because Harlequin does put out books every month. But then after that, they keep them online forever. And so you can get them shipped to you. And a lot of times, if they're still available, Barnes & Noble will have them on the shelf even past mid-June.
Wow. So these are only in the store for 1 month. And
right.
then they move on.
Right. Well,
okay.
Basically, Harlequin puts out 6 intrigues every month.
Mm-hmm.
And so the bookstores will put them on the shelf. But once they sell out, they don't reorder more because they know new ones are coming out in the new month. And then they just, when you go in and ask the bookstore, they'll order it and have it delivered to their store, but they won't stock their shelves
mm-hmm.
because they have the new ones coming out for June.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's why they call them category. They like coming out. They keep them out every month. Yeah.
Wow. Well, this is like writing 101. I mean, I've learned so many neat things in this little short amount of time that I did not know about, you know, before. I mean, we just take it for granted. Oh, yeah, there's a book. I'll just pick it up. But we don't know all the intricacies. We don't know every single detail that an author will actually go through to get that book out to the public. So thanks for sharing that. That's very cool. So without giving away too much about this book, can you give us kind of like a teaser on it?
Oh, sure. It's, you know what? It's basically a save the world type book. You know, it's on the run. The main characters in the book are in a race against time to stop a madman from destroying a city with a new technology. And so, and in the meantime, they really they were a relationship gone bad, and they're constantly being thrown together to try and do this. And as much as they want to stay apart, they keep getting thrown together, and they have to stop this guy before he ends up killing millions of people. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, you know, the reason I said that was, I had the privilege of reading it, and quite honestly, I wouldn't normally go out and read a romance novel, right? But,
right.
However. I'll tell you, from a male standpoint, it was filled with enough power and action that it really kept me on the edge of my seat. So, you know, I for anybody out there, folks, definitely go out there, get a copy of Bodyguard Lockdown, and then any of her other books, like she said, and she'll give more information towards the end, where you can actually go out and pick those up as well, the series, right? Is that correct?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can get into my Facebook, too, my Facebook at org/author Donna Young, or my website, donna-young.com, has all that information.
That's awesome. So, Donna, I want to know personally, what inspires you as a person and an author and a mother, all of that?
Wow, what inspires me? You know what? It's that happily ever after. It really is. You know, it's the fact that even with the toughest time, I was listening to you talk about current events and even the stuff that we deal with on a daily basis and the issues that we're dealing with as a society on a daily basis, it's kind of knowing that we all strive for that happily ever after. We all have our own version of it or view of it. I just love that. I just love that concept. And it's fun that I get to make my job out of bringing that to kind of life in a fictional way, but, you know, just having fun with that. But that's what inspires me is the whole the family, the love, the happily ever after. I know it sounds corny, huh?
No, it doesn't sound corny, but, you know, I mean, you're actually capturing that for people. And, you know, like some, like what you were saying, you know, some people that are your fans, you know, they really want that escape because some people don't have that. So they want to be able to get that or to experience that. And what better way than to read a book and to be, you know, to be able to, like, go from your normal day-to-day activity, escape, and get that happily ever after, so to speak, type of feeling.
Right.
So, I mean, that's kind of cool because you're bringing joy into people's lives. So, you know, that's really
that's
good.
Fun.
Are you still doing signings? Are you still doing?
Going to New York and May 25th. There's a big book expo. Out in New York, so I'll be out there on June 1st signing. And locally, I don't think I am, but it will be on my website and my Facebook if any more are scheduled. I have not heard. I was just in L.A., and so I'm hoping. I would love to do. I love book signings because I like to meet people. If not this time, then next time. Absolutely. But, yeah. New York is huge. But
yeah.
If anybody's out in New York. But, here, if they just want to check my website, I have news and current events or news and events, and it'll be on there for any local book signing.
And that's great. And that website is donna-young.com. Is that correct?
Yes, donna-young.com.
Go ahead. Uh-huh.
No, I was just going to say on my Facebook, too. But you can access that through my website. Yeah.
That's great. So tell me, what do you have coming down the pike? Are you starting to write again another book? Or are there some new things coming down the pike for Donna Young? Let us know about it. Or can you tell us anything?
You know what? I actually have several projects I'm working on at this time, and most of them are around writing, some short stories and some another Harlequin, hopefully, and a couple other things. Nothing that's permanently set yet or that I have finalized yet, so I can't be definite, but it'll definitely, once it's done and it's all signed and everything is completed, it will be out there and release dates and stuff like that. But you're always working on something while one thing. Yeah, that's nice. That's the fun part, that you can keep working on other stories. So,
that's awesome. So, and so do you imagine, is there going to be in this series? So you said there's how many books? in this series?
Eight. This is my eighth one in this series. I have 9 books out, but I have 8 in this series.
And will this be the end of this series and on to a new one, or is there going to be one more? Do you know?
This is actually, you know what? I love this series because it, you know, I started with the series. So I can't imagine not continuing the series, and the way that it's kind of evolving, I can continue and write this series.
Mm-hmm.
With Harlequin. I actually am working on another type series by itself, a different series. That's
mm-hmm.
not the Labyrinth one, just because,
mm-hmm.
you know, as a writer, you don't want to get stale.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always constant stories running through your head that you want to write. And so, yeah, that's one of the things I am working on is another series. But this one will always, I think, as long as Harlequin wants to continue working with me and producing and publishing these, I'll always have this series because it's just fun. And it's fun when I get the feedback on it from the readers, and, you know, they'll say, oh, I laughed out loud with this one, or, you know, it's just kind of close to my heart because it was my first one.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll write it, yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So, again, if anybody wants to get in touch with you, the best way to get in touch with you would be through your website, donna-young.com, or by Facebook. Do you have a Twitter account as well?
You know, I don't. I haven't embraced the Twitter world yet.
I know.
I'm working on it.
I know. You know what? I'm right there with you. It just took me... I mean, people were telling me, Joey, you need to get a Twitter. And I'm like, you know, I really don't want to. And they're like, no, you need to do it. And I'm like, no, I don't really want to. When we started off with this show, it really has been very helpful. It's kind of strange because you are limited to the amount of characters that you can write. But,
uh-huh.
You know, this won't be a problem for you because you're a creative writer. So it should be easy for you. I've learned to, instead of typing out 2, you know, I use the number 2 and I abbreviate a lot of words. And, you know, there's different ways to get your message across with limited
mm-hmm.
amount of characters. But it's kind of interesting. So I would encourage you at some point. But, you know, I mean,
technology. It's intimidating. Actually, I find
do
it
you?
Intimidating. Yeah, I do, because it's just like it goes way out in the universe, and you don't get to edit it. It's, you know, and I'm, you know, as a writer, you always edit and re-edit, and it's just like, yeah, it's kind of, I think it's kind of a little scary. But I'm going to. I am definitely going to.
Well, you can always delete the tweets. So you can go back in and delete, you know, and I've done that. You know, where I've gone, oh, my gosh, man, I just spelled this incorrectly. What a doofus. I mean, that looks really retarded. You know, that doesn't look very good. And so then I just go in and I delete it. It's gone.
Oh, okay. I definitely have to educate myself on the Twitter stuff.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah, I mean.
I know the wave of the future.
Right. But I definitely do not, you know, I'm not of the notion, I don't believe that we should communicate always in this manner, you know. I mean, I really believe that we have to go back to simple conversation with people, you know, hey, how you doing? Reading books. I mean, I just started reading books on my iPad, you know, but
but
you know what? It's strange. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know, and then I have these people, you know, these people, I gotta tell you, can I tell you a funny story?
Absolutely. Yeah,
so I was on a plane. I don't know where I was traveling to. I can't remember. But, you know, when people are reading, you know, you have your book and you can turn the pages. And I like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that in studying as well. And so these little, you know, people started to get those little gadgets. What do they call them? It's like...
the Kindle?
Yeah, the Kindle. Yeah. Thank you, yeah. So anyway, this person that obviously was a bookworm was sitting across from me, and they were trying to read their book, and it was funny because they were so annoyed with all the people around them making noise and they couldn't read that. You know how with a standard book you're reading it, and if somebody annoys you, you can just turn the page. and you know,
mm-hmm.
it's loud and it's, you know, you can
attention.
Slam your book, you know. Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, you should have seen how this person was getting annoyed. They were turning their pages with their finger, you know, and obviously there was no sound, you know. <We're kidding. laughs> And I was like, so finally they took their Kindle and they slammed it shut.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, there you go. That shows you get back to a regular paperback or hardback.
you know what? I don't think that's going to happen, though. I got to tell you, just from what I've seen, with book sales and stuff, e-books are definitely taking off. They are, in a lot of cases, they're overpowering the print books.
Yeah,
it's definitely the new thing.
Right. Are you comfortable with that? Do you like that?
You know, I'm like you. I like the paper. I definitely am from that. I grew up reading paperback books, and
right.
I like that. And there's something about having that cup of coffee and a paperback book in my purse, or, you know, when being able to read. But I understand how easy it is to carry 1,000 books in a Kindle, and just being able to have that with you and at the doctor's office or at the airport and pull it out. And, you know, I know so many people who will read 2 and 3 books at the same time, and they swear by them because they can just carry it. It's so convenient.
Yeah.
It really is convenient.
Well,
and,
you know, I like it in the sense that, I mean, like, for instance, it has, like, a little library, you know? Like, I can
mm-hmm.
go into this little library, and then I can tap on the book. But it's just strange, you know? I mean, I'm turning pages on the screen, and it's just odd, you know? I mean,
it is odd, yeah.
It's just, it doesn't feel natural. And then the other thing that bothers me is that it, you know, I like sometimes to see pictures, and I like to be able to go back, and, you know, I know where to go back in a book, and, you know, and with this, it's more cumbersome, so I'm not able to, it just seems a lot more difficult for me. But to your point, when people are, you know, they can have 1,000 books, and they can be in their library and just tap on it, they can read 2 or 3 books, and they like it. But
they do. But it is much more sterile. But I got to tell you, for your people out there who are listening that want to be writers, and no matter what genre, the fact that the e-books have exploded and has opened a whole new avenue for people to get their work out. It's a wonderful time to be a writer because you don't have to go traditional publishing anymore. You can self-publish. Amazon will help you self-publish. There are so many avenues now because they don't have to do print form. They can go strictly to ebook form. And it really is great for those up-and-coming writers that just can't get their manuscripts read, because it's very hard sometimes to get a publisher and an editor to look at your manuscript. I got lucky. But I know for a fact that there's editors out there that get 1,000 manuscripts a week, and they take on maybe 3 or 4 new authors a year. And so the odds of going getting published traditionally is very small.
Wow.
Because you have a lot of, but to self-publish, there's a lot of people out there, really good writers, who are self-publishing or going with EPUBs, that are getting their voices out, their books out there, and they're getting a following just strictly on the strength of their voice and their storytelling, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
So
now,
in that mm-hmm. way, I am all for ebooks. I think it's wonderful that they can do that. Yeah.
Well, so when they're self-publishing, though, I mean, are they really getting the publicity that they would need for the book?
You know what? Some are doing it. There's a lot of different. There's a whole plethora of information out there on how to self-publish and get your name out there. A lot of them are offering their books free for like the first 2 weeks on Amazon or on Barnes & Noble or whoever they decide to go with, and then they'll kick in the price, and all they need to do is offer that first one for free, and a lot of them will pick up readers that way. They'll start, you know, they'll do their Facebooks, and they'll, you know, it's all by word of mouth, and they really do start being their own advocates. And, yeah, you know, not everybody does, because, you know, but it definitely, the good ones rise to the top and they do get a following. And then there's other ones out there that have a brand already that have traditionally published and are expanding and self-publishing along with the traditionally published.
Right.
They can write different genres, even though, you know, because readers tend to want what you always give them. And so, you know, they like that. Like when a person picks up my book, they know what they're going to get, and that's what they look forward to. If they opened a cover of Harlequin Intrigue and they saw historical or my Western, you know, they would be disappointed. They'd feel cheated. So you do want to give your fans what they expect to a certain point. But if you want to, you know, as a creative person, you naturally want to try different things sometimes. A lot of authors are taking that step into self-publishing to do that under different names.
I want to know, in your Western, did any of them have an accent? Did any of them talk like this?
Oh, I got to tell you, it was so cliche, Joey. It was so bad. It was bad. I actually looked at it a few years ago, and I was just like, oh, my goodness. It was, you know, as an experience, right? Because, you know, I've judged contests now, and I've done different things. And
right.
And you look back and go, oh, my goodness, what was I thinking? Ooh, you know, cringe moments, total cringe moments. I wouldn't let anybody see that book.
Well, you know what? We all have those. I talked to you about this. So I songwrite and I sing and I act, and I've been doing that for years. Jammin' is a very good musician as well as being a great sound engineer and sound producer. So we've all been there, and you know, there's things that I've produced from years ago, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I hope nobody has a copy of this anymore. Thank God nobody's using cassette players. And then you hear somebody go, you know, I found my cassette player. I hadn't seen it in like 25 years, and there it was. And I'm like, oh, my God, I hope you don't have my tape. You know, it's like, so it's kind of interesting, you know, things from years gone by. But that's when we're starting, you know, and as we perfect our craft and we become better, then – you know, it's a natural progression. But that's very nice of you to share with the audience. For those people that are interested in writing or sharing, you know, their thoughts, how they really can do, how they can self-publish, because that is, it's really, anything that's artistic, you know, there's different ways to promote your art. I mean, even what we're doing here, you know, today, I mean, years ago, this would have been bizarre, you know, it really would have.
Oh, I know,
you know,
yeah,
a radio show on the internet that goes throughout the whole world, and people can hear you, and they can go, you know, and then it goes on demand, and then blah, blah, blah. And, you know, years ago, that would have been, everybody would have said, no, no, no. But now, it's just a natural progression. People do this all the time. They get on their computers, so you'll hear this broadcast. It's podcasts, you know, and the list goes on. So there's different ways of promoting art in different manners, and you just have to kind of go with the flow. You know, for a long time, I've really kind of put the brakes on, going, no, I don't want to go there. But in order to move forward, you really do. You really need to. And, you know, sometimes I just have not wanted to grow up, and I guess part of that you know, I guess part of that, part of that is I've always felt that, you know, Facebook and just computers and all this kind of stuff is so impersonal. And in the town that I live in, there was a restaurant that was geared, it didn't last very long, but it was geared around the fact that, you know, we can interact with one another while we're eating or drinking coffee or whatever, and we have computers in front of each other. So you would actually go into this place, and there were tables, and there were computer screens in front of you. And I remember walking down the street, and I'm like, this is weird. I mean, you just looked at these people, and they were not interacting at all. So families together, they were just in front of their computer screen, you know, the kids playing games, the parents.
No.
And I'm like, oh, this is weird. And then I remember a couple of years ago, I was in an elevator, and there were these two girls talking. And one said to the other, oh, you know, I just ran into Tanya. And the other one's like, oh, really? She's like, yeah. And she's like, And, you know, they both have their phones in their hands. And so the other one says, yeah, we're getting together. And she goes, the other one goes, oh, that's great. Where are you guys going to meet? And she said, oh, we're not going to, as the door's opening up, right, the, you know, the elevator door swinging open, she's like, oh, we're not meeting in person. We're meeting on Facebook. And I'm like, what? But, you know, so things like that have always kind of freaked me out because I thought, you know, this is really disconnection. But having done this, I have realized that, you know what, you have to open up your mind. I, mm-hmm. you know, I used to have MySpace, and I, you know, I didn't want to graduate over to Facebook at all, but I have an interface, which is really not Facebook, but it is, but it just lets people know, like, what's happening with the show. And then I did graduate over to Twitter, and, you know, it's a slow progression. But there's mm-hmm. some really cool things because you can get a message out. Like tonight, our show here with you went out to everybody that's part of my Twitter, you know, group, right?
Oh, very
and
cool.
And there's nearly, yeah. No, I'm not going to say everybody saw it, but the amount of people that, you know, that I'm connected to is close to 4,000. So, you know, that message goes out. And then, you know, your message from – and so, you know, you just we just have to move with technology. It's kind of hard, but, you know, we're doing
yeah.
it. And
I
now
have
we'll,
two teenagers
we'll,
who keep nudging me that way because, you know what, that's what they were born with. They don't know life without a computer and all of this stuff, my teenagers. I have a 17 and a 15-year-old. And they're you know, and it's very hard to stay – away from it when your kids, because you want to know what your kids are doing. So I found myself really being pulled towards much more faster or quicker than I think I would have. Like you, to me, it was weird, but I'm starting to get more comfortable with it because of them, which is nice.
Yeah, yeah, you know, it was interesting. I just, you're talking about teenagers. I just ran across some people that weren't, they're not teenagers, but they're in their early 20s. We were having a conversation, and so I mentioned something to them about, you know, the Brady Bunch. And
yeah. Brady Bunch, wow.
And they kind of all looked at me, and they're like, and somebody said, oh, is that like a new kind of rock group? And I like, and then somebody else said, no, I think it was a cereal. I'm like, no, we're not talking about... Yeah, we're not talking about Captain Crunch. We're talking about the Brady Bunch. Anyway, so, yeah, so we just have to move forward in time. So, anyway, you know, it's been a real great, it's just been great talking to you. We have talked nearly, wow, we've talked for about 50 some odd minutes now. So
wow.
Time just went flying by. And, again, folks, if you're interested in picking up Donna Young's book, Bodyguard Lockdown, be sure you do that. Again, you can go to Barnes & Noble's, right?
Right.
You can also tell them where else they can pick up a copy.
Oh, you can go on my website, donna-young.com, and it will tell you exactly where you can get copies, or you can go to your local Barnes & Noble. They should still be there, or on barnesandnoble.com or amazon.com. You can find them. And if you want to look, check out the reviews, go to Goodreads. And if you like it, maybe leave a review.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah, that would be awesome. So,
all
yeah.
right. Well, Donna, it's been a pleasure having you on Live from the Bay with Joey. We look forward to hearing more about your great work. So, Donna, keep us posted. So, on behalf of us, thanks so much for joining us. Okay?
Thanks for having me, Joey. It was
Thank you. It was a pleasure for us, too, as well.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Well, Jammin, are you there? Are you there with us now?
Yes, I am. Great show.
Yeah. I learned some really kind of cool things about being an author, you know? I mean, I just, you know, it just amazes me how much I learn from all these shows. Things that I would have never known, things that we take for granted. Who would have ever known, you know, some of the things that Donna went over tonight, so this was really good. So, folks, again, go to her website, donna-young.com, and you know. So yeah, it was kind of cool, wasn't it?
Yeah, enjoyed it very much. I was interesting to hear how people are publishing nowadays. You know, with the internet and self-publishing and all the things going on, there's a lot of different options now that I was never aware of.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, Donna, they were nice enough to give me her copy, Bodyguard Lockdown. This is the new release. I also got a copy of A Bodyguard for Christmas. So definitely want to pass this on to your wife. I know she would enjoy these as well. And what I liked about Bodyguard Lockdown was, like I said, from a male standpoint, I mean, honestly, I'm not going to go out and buy a romance novel. I mean, that's not something, and I like action type stuff, you know, blah, blah, blah. But there was enough of that in that book that it kept me intrigued. So I think it's a really, it's a kind of a cool book. It's nice to give to a family member or to give as a gift. And she definitely gives us ways that we can, that people can actually do that. So that's, I think that was wonderful, you know? And just like you said, who would have ever known about the self-publishing, right? That people can do this by themselves now.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, I have a friend that writes also, obviously not as well known as Donna Young, but has a book that would like to self-publish and was asking me if I knew how to do it. Well, you know, I have a little fraction of knowledge, and so I tried to point them in the right direction. But this is really good. You know, it's good to know that there are other options out there. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Anyway, we just want to thank Donna again for joining us. And, you know, I want to go back on a few of these topics that that have been hitting the news. A couple of more that we're going to do, a few more, two or three more that we're going to do. So did you hear about this lawyer in Pennsylvania? No. Excuse me. Let me go back. There was a abortion doctor. Did you hear about this? His name is Kermit Gosnell. First time I read it, I was like, Kermit the Frog, come on now. Abortion doctor Kermit Gosnell gave up his right to appeal his murder conviction in the deaths of three babies, and in return will be spared a potential death sentence. So he's 72 years old. So it's just unbelievable. I was reading this and I was just... So he routinely performed illegal abortions past Pennsylvania's 24-week limit, and while the babies were still moving, whimpering or breathing. You know, I don't know, man. I don't want to talk about this anymore because I have pretty strong opinions on this, but I just it's just unbelievable. Some of the stuff that I see hitting the news all the time. On a daily basis, it's, I mean, things that you just never think, you know, would hit the news, or years ago, you would have never thought, you know, that they would hit the news. But anyway, a couple of lighter things in life is, did you hear about this 4-year-old mayor that's running a Minnesota town?
No, is there somebody else going to be mayor in Minnesota? No, I think that was a governor before, wasn't it? That wrestler that was a governor for a while.
Well, I don't know, but he's 4 years old, man. He's a toddler.
4 years old. Wow.
I mean, basically, I mean, he's 4 years old. His name is Robert Tufts. He's the mayor of Dorset, Minnesota. I don't know about you, but you know. I think I would have an issue. I mean, what do you bring a mayor that's 4 years old? I mean, do you bring him a toy when you want to have a conversation with him?
Do you spike his bottle? I don't know. What do you do, you know?
Exactly. I mean, you definitely can't meet for a cup of coffee. You know? I mean, that's just a no-no. But anyway...
Now, is he a mayor or did he run for being a mayor?
No, he is a mayor. Yep. Dorset.
Wow. I've got to go read this.
Dorset, Minnesota. You can see it. Daily News. 4-year-old mayor is running Minnesota town. So So, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's kind of, you know, people think he's amazing.
Oh,
you know,
man.
He's well-spoken. He's right in your face. He walks around with his little stick, and he's an expert fisherman. And, you know, the town is not very big. I think it has a population of 22 people. But nonetheless, he's the mayor.
I'm wondering if he was able to vote for himself.
Who knows? I mean, you know, I mean, I just think it's just, it's funny. I mean, it's just funny. And you see the pictures of these people with him, and it's like, really?
I've got to see this. I've got to go look at this after the show. I'm going to go do that.
You need to do that. Also, here's another funny story. I thought it was funny. I kind of feel sorry for the guy. I thought it was funny. I don't like what he did, but okay, so this guy is a man charged. He's 30 years old. He was charged with hiding in a supermarket for an overnight feast. Yes, indeed. Trevor Runyon hid in a closed grocery store and had a one-man party that included steaks, birthday cake, and beer. And, I know, isn't this amazing? Let me read you the thing. I mean, it's kind of funny, you know, in a way. It was on MSN News. Authorities have charged a man who officers say had an overnight feast in a closed supermarket outside of Louisville. Now, I'm not advocating, you know, none of us here are advocating doing this, and we're not trying to mock it, but it's just, I mean, come on, I've never heard of such a thing. The manager of Value Market said he found 57 empty whipped cream cans in the garbage when he arrived Monday morning. Wave TV in Louisville reported that 30-year-old Trevor Runyon was charged after he was found in the ceiling of the store. Surveillance video from the store showed that Runyon cooked and ate six steaks, washed them down with beer, and then topped off his meal with shrimp and birthday cake. So, there you go.
Okay, what did he do? Well, how much whipped cream was that again?
They found 57 empty whipped cream cans.
57. What did he do with the whipped cream cans?
I have no idea. And they're not clear whether he has an attorney yet or either. But, you know, I mean, it's kind of funny in the sense that it's kind of lighthearted. And he had his own party. He had his own feast, you know. And, you know, there's a picture of him. I mean, he doesn't look like, I mean, he looks like a kind of fun guy, you know. But, I mean, it is kind of a little bit, it is kind of humorous in a way. I mean, obviously probably not for the store because, you know, they lost a lot of merchandise. So that in itself is not good. I mean, maybe the guy was hungry. I don't know.
Well, was he homeless? Or
I don't know.
Like
maybe he got stuck
food?
In there. I don't know. Maybe he got stuck in there and he was hungry. I mean, nobody,
wow.
You know, nobody knows. I mean, yeah.
That's a lot of steak.
Six. What was it? So it was six steaks. He washed them down with beer and then topped off his meal with shrimp and birthday cake. You know, now, dude, I'm thinking, wouldn't you rather have like those six steaks with your shrimp and then drink your beer and then top off your meal with a birthday cake? Not, you know, have your steak and then beer and then you top off your meal with shrimp and birthday cake. And that just sounds wrong, you know. I mean, I have this. Can you imagine putting shrimp on top of a like chocolate birthday cake or just a white filled, you know, birthday cake? I mean, it's just, that's wrong.
Well, I mean, everybody's got different tastes, and some people like things weird to others, you know, like that may have reminded me of a weird thing I like to eat that people laugh at me about, you know. And
what is that?
Well, you know, for all my life, I love spaghetti. I love Italian
right.
food, but I really love spaghetti.
Right.
And there's this thing I've had my whole life. I don't know if it came from my mom or whatever. I really don't know, but I love having a peanut butter sandwich with my spaghetti. It is just the most awesome combination you could ever have.
Okay. Wait a minute. So tell me that again.
Okay, a peanut butter sandwich. You know, just plain peanut butter. You
okay,
know,
now you do remember that I'm part Italian. So, okay, this, I mean, tread lightly here.
Hey,
go
this
ahead.
Is nothing about Italians. This is about me. I'm weird, man. Okay, it's peanut butter sandwiches, plain straight peanut butter, a whole bunch of it on bread with my spaghetti. I just love it with tomato sauce. So anything like spaghetti, you know, lasagna, anything with tomato sauce, but mostly spaghetti. Yeah, I know it's weird, but hey, you know, put me on the list of hot and weird topics.
That is really strange. I have never in all my years have heard anybody, nobody, have I ever heard that's eaten peanut butter.
I tell you what, I've had
spaghetti.
Friends.
Now let me ask you something. What drink? What do you drink with that?
Whatever. I mean, you know,
like
I used
milk.
To drink milk. Now I drink milk. Used to, but now I drink water. I don't drink milk anymore. So I drink water. Or
I hope you don't drink wine. That would be really gross, dude.
You know, I think I might have actually done that a couple times. I'm trying to
that
think,
would
but
be
I,
really
I might have had wine with my meal as well. I really don't know. It was definitely a red wine, a good Cabernet or Merlot or something.
Okay, so when you go to a restaurant, what I want to know is you go to a restaurant and you sit down, you will order, like, spaghetti, and then do you ask for a side of, like, a peanut butter sandwich?
I won't do that in restaurants. This is just my home.
Oh, this
thing,
is your
know?
Oh, this
yeah.
is your closeted
yeah.
thing. What you do at home?
Yeah, I'm a closet peanut butter and spaghetti eater. Yeah.
Now you know, I thought years ago, I thought what was a weird combination. I think Bob's Big Boy. Remember those?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
definitely. They had, and I think there's still some Bob's Big Boy around, so that's kind of cool. But they had a thing where it was spaghetti and chili. Now, I thought that was absolutely gross, and, you know, I thought, oh, man, that's gross, and until I had it, and I was like, wow, this is kind of cool, you know, but I don't think I can really, I don't think I could palate peanut butter.
Okay,
with,
now, this is what I heard from some of my friends over all the years, some younger and some older, but they said the same thing you're saying right now, and you know what, some of them have tried it. And they've gotten back to me and said, you know, this is pretty good. I have to say, you're not as crazy as I thought you were. May not be my favorite combination, but you know what? It actually was pretty good.
So why wouldn't you just, like, mix peanut butter in your spaghetti sauce?
Nah, it's not the same, man. It's got to be on bread. It's that combination of eating it with bread, you know, because, like, a real good sourdough is really good with spaghetti, as you know.
What about sourdough? What about garlic bread topped with peanut butter with your spaghetti?
I tried that once. No, I didn't like that. The garlic and peanut butter combo didn't work for me. But,
it didn't work for you?
Sourdough bread with peanut butter and spaghetti, real nice.
What about peanut butter and jelly and spaghetti?
Nope, jelly's not my thing. I don't even like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. It's got to be just straight peanut butter. So, you know, no jelly. No.
Well, you know, I don't know. I don't think I could try it, but maybe someday I'll try. I don't know. That's really weird, man. That is just really weird.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm sorry.
Thank you for ending my show on that weird note. But anyway, well, you know, we had a great show, and it was fun having Donna on. It's just a kick because, you know, the way I met her was just, that was kind of unbelievable. Again, you know, I was looking for, and I think I had talked to you about it, I was looking for an author, and then I just happened to be at a Starbucks, and I heard her and her friend chatting away, and then, you know, I didn't want to be obvious that I was listening, but, I mean, it was obvious that she was working on a book and she was an author, and we started talking, and it was kind of like, wow, serendipity. Everything just worked, you know what I mean? It was just like, this is awesome, and kind of the rest is kind of history. And then we got in touch. She said, I'll get in touch with my publicist, Becky, and then Becky got in touch with us, and then that's how we had ShopaCon. Remember when we did that show?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
ChocaCon, ShopaCon. Yeah.
I'd like to check in with them and see how things are going, actually.
Yeah, so anyway, that was really kind of cool, and so now we had a chance to, and Donna was really, you know, it's just an easy interview. The time went really quick. She gave people really a great great information, you know, especially mm-hmm. for aspiring authors out there. Just great information for them. So, again, folks, you know, go ahead, get a copy of this while you can. Bodyguard Lockdown. So, jamming. We're going to be here tomorrow night at 8 p.m. We have an interesting show. We're going to be doing a spiritual practice, which is Lectio Divina. So that will be with Phil Wyman, and that'll be at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And then next week we'll have joining us Tippi Hedren. So she's Melanie Griffith's mother, and as you know, she was the star of that old 60s hit movie, Alfred Hitchcock movie, The Birds. She'll be joining us. Well, on that note, we're gonna say adios, and until the next time, folks, this is Joey on behalf of Live from the Bay with Joey. On behalf of Jammin', we thank you for joining us. We look forward to maybe having you join us tomorrow evening, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And until then, take care and have a great night.
Thank you for joining us today on Live from the Bay with Joey.